Welcome to Today with Dr. K. I'm Dr. K. Wise Whitehead here again to talk with you about some of the stories that matter. Folks, there's a lot going on. There's a lot going on around the country. There's a lot going on around our city. There's a lot going on in our community. But today we want to begin by just extending our prayers and our warm thoughts to every person in this country who lives anywhere where they're going to be impacted by Hurricane Florence. I understand that Hurricane Florence is now Category 2 storm, but there's still going to be a lot of damage, a lot of rain, a lot of wind. And so we are praying for you. We are concerned about you. Keep us in the loop about what is going on. Our goal for today is to spend some time talking a little bit about Hurricane Florence. We're going to talk to our WEA news director, Julius White, get an update from him. I also have a resident from Durham, North Carolina, who's going to chime in on the show. And we have Mr. Hamil Harris coming on. He's a professor here at Morgan State University. And he's going to talk to us about what the impact is on the Black community when disaster hits. We'll do all of that in the first hour. And in the second hour, I want to talk about the fact that in some Baltimore City schools, they are preparing our children for what to do if an armed shooter enters the classroom. They're teaching them how to fight back. There was an op-ed in the Baltimore Sun written by an 11th grade student at Carver Senior High School. We're going to have her join us at 4 o'clock to talk about safety measures in the school. And then we want to get into a discussion about the fact that there are a number of high school students and middle school students who are reporting that they have been robbed on the way to school. So not only are our children dealing with violence, when you start talking about homicide and redlining and lead in the water, they're also dealing with violence happening to them against one of their own peers. Let's talk about ways that we can make the environment safer for our children. We'll talk about that in the second hour. But first, on this day in history, we had the first serious slave conspiracy in colonial America took place on September 13, 1663. An indentured servant betrayed the plot of white servants and Negro enslaved people working together in Virginia. What is interesting, they met in the woods, they planned an operation, they collected arms and ammunition, they had as many as 30 recruits, and they were planning to just march into the governor's mansion, demand that they have their freedom. And they were betrayed by a servant. So that happened on this day back in 1663. Also on this day in 1881, Lewis Latimer patented his electric lamp with a carbon filament. So when you go and you cut that light on, think about Lewis Latimer today. At age 15, he joined the Navy. On September 16th, 1863, he received an honorable discharge from the Navy, and he worked for a patent law firm. He learned how to use a set square, ruler, and other tools later. After his employers recognized his talent for sketching patent drawings, he was promoted to the position of head draftsman. He earned $20 a week by 1872. Do the math. For every one of our dollars, it's about 17 when you do the conversion math. He was inducted into the National Inventors Hall of Fame. Let us not forget the work of Lewis Latimer and all of the sacrifices that he made to move us forward and to provide us with light, folks. I'd also like to note that today, of course, is the day for a number of you who are involved with hip hop and you understand what happens in the hip hop world outside of the fact that hip hop rap music is now the number one genre of music in America. Rap music actually surpassed rock music for the first time ever. That happened last year, and it's been holding steady. But on this day, as we think about rap music being the number one genre in America, on this day in 1996 was a day that Tupac Shakur passed away. His music and philosophy were rooted in many American, African-American, and world entities, including the Black Panther Party, Black nationalism, egalitarianism, liberty. He talked about his love of theater and Shakespeare. All of that influenced his work. Some of you may know that we have a connection to Tupac Shakur because he was a student of the Baltimore School for the Arts. He did go here. He studied theater. He talked about Shakespearean psychology of inter-gang wars. In 2015, there was a biopic called All Eyes on Me. Tupac Shakur's memory and his legacy continues to live on in the hearts of many who loved his music. He died today at the age of 25. Let's listen to a little bit of his work. Keep your head up. sang to me. He had me feeling like... Please note, folks, our school depot is still open. If you remember last Saturday, we put the call out and many of you responded. Well, we still have water. We still have toilet paper, toilet tissue, hand sanitizer. We have books, pencils, paper. We have all of those things to give out no cost to any teacher who is in need. We've already connected with Jesse Schneiderman. He's a teacher at Frederick Douglass High School. We filled his car up to give him the essential supplies he needs because we have all decided that no child in Baltimore City will go without their essential items. I also want to note that today, if you have an opportunity, pick up the Afro newspaper because based upon our conversations, what we had last week for 4 days straight, I focused my Afro op-ed column on that. And it's called Baltimore City Schools Throwback to the Jim Crow Era. And I make the argument, as many of you did, and you agree with me, that what is happening in our schools is criminal. It is obvious that this system does not love our children. It does not value our children. It's not setting them up in environments where they can succeed. So where the work needs to happen, two places. One, we have to drill down and we have to hold these politicians accountable so that our children can get what they need. And two, we have to lean in. We have to make sure we're providing them with what they need. So take a look at the Afro column. We're going to talk a little bit more about that in the second hour. You can just give us a call, set up an appointment, either calling 443-885-3564 or 410-319-8888. Talk to my award-winning producer, Justina Pollard, and she will make sure that you get an appointment. That's the school depot. We're going to keep it open. We're going to switch gears just a little bit because I want to get an update on what is going on with Hurricane Florence. It's now been downgraded to a Category 2 storm and exactly what that means. We have Julius White standing by. He's our WEAA news director. Julius, how are you? Julius? Okay. Yes, Julius, I can hear you now. How are you?
Well, I'm good. How about you today?
I'm doing well, thank you. Can you give us an update? I've heard that it's now been downgraded to a Category 2 storm, but I've been told at the same time that we shouldn't take that as something to mean it's going to be a little bit easier for the people down south.
No, because this still is a monster storm, and I'm from Alabama, and we've learned over the years, storms that come up through the Gulf Coast. Now, this storm is coming up off the Atlantic. Just to give you an example, if we all recall Hurricane Katrina, storms that come off the Atlantic and come up, it's the cold water, meaning the warm water of the Gulf Coast. Katrina hit as a 3, but when it met the warm water of the Gulf Coast, it exploded into a 5. That caused the storm surge. That's what blew all the levees in New Orleans. New Orleans is already underwater, under sea level, so that caused the problems there. So with the Category 2 storm, as Florence is coming in, it's downgraded. Its winds have diminished just a little bit, but it's still building on the back end. The eye has yet to come over just yet. So on the back end of that, you have winds that will be 110 miles an hour later today. So you have some cities, such as in Wilmington, they already have 12,000 people that are in the dark right now. So storm surge will be a problem in some areas further inland. Can see storm surge problems, flooding as much as 22 to 40 inches of water within the next 24 hours or so.
Now, I read that in Wilmington that they are expected to get 8 months' worth of rain in just 3 days.
Yeah, because this is going to stall. It's already slowed down. This was moving at a pretty good clip earlier, at about 20 miles an hour, but this morning it slowed down to between 15 and 17 miles an hour. So the slower this gets, the more dangerous it gets. And okay. This, of course, is going to add to the storm surge problem.
Okay, well, just one last question for you, Julius, which might be a two-part question. One last question, because I know that people are very concerned about what's happening in the South, but also are a bit concerned about what's happening here. Based upon what you've been looking at, what should we be concerned about here? Because I'm like many people, I went out and I got everything I needed in case this hurricane hit. What should I be focused on now? Okay, are we in the clear?
Save it for the next storm.
Okay. So it's not going to be much happening up here.
No. What we will have here is basically a rain event. We're seeing some of it now. The heavier rain will be next week. And when I talked to the National Weather Service meteorologist earlier today, Jeremy Geiger out of Washington, he says he doesn't believe it's going to be anything like a tropical depression or a tropical storm. We will have remnants, from Florence, but it won't be anything in a severe nature. Rain may be heavy at times, but nothing in a severe manner, as we'll see in cases of tropical depression or tropical storm aftermath, but some remnants. And we'll see the heavier rain began this weekend.
Okay. And we just want to remind people to just check in, because I know throughout the whole event, you start early in the morning on Mornings with Mikkel, there'll be updates about what is going on, keeping us in tune. Thank you so much, Julius White, WEA News Director. So, folks, I want to welcome to the show my brother, Carson Wise. He is my youngest brother, and he's just going to tell us. He's based in Durham, North Carolina. He lives there. He's a chemistry teacher with his wife and his two daughters. But I want to get a sense of what's happening in the city. Carson, how are you?
Okay.
How's everything going down there?
Everything's going all right. Actually, I'm out right now. I ran to the grocery store, and the folks are still out in the street. They have a lot of warnings out, but they're saying that it's going to hit Wilmington, I guess right around 11 o'clock tonight, and kind of make its way up toward us. We're going to get a lot of rain.
Okay.
I'm not coastal. I'm more inland. So I'm about an hour and a half from the beach.
Okay. But you're only about 20 minutes from Raleigh, and they said Raleigh is going to be hit as well.
Yeah, it's going to wrap around Raleigh. So I'm like 20 minutes west of Raleigh.
Now, you made the decision, Carson, which I thought was very interesting. You made the decision to stay and just ride out the storm. And I'm getting a sense, based upon what you've been saying in our conversations today, that there are a number of people who chose not to leave. Why is that?
Well, based on where we are and predicting the rain, most of the folks who actually have left are folks who probably live maybe about 30 minutes east of me on the other side of Raleigh, right around Rocky Mount.
Okay.
Princeville, North Carolina, because those are the folks who have been hit, I guess, numerous times when they've had hurricanes throughout the years.
Okay.
And I have a good friend of mine. He just went down to get his mom from Princeville, which is right outside Rocky Mount, because his mom's about 75, and she's been out. She just got back in the house from the last hurricane about 2 months ago. I remember he got her back in there, and they just took a U-Haul and just got her back out again.
And then one more quick question, Carson. Thank you so much for taking time to just talk to us. What is the feeling on the ground? Now, I know that schools are closed. Are they still doing evacuations there? Like what are you getting as happening across the state as you're preparing for this?
Across the state, more east of me, they're doing evacuation, having folks move more toward more western North Carolina, if you can. But more west, I guess, more toward, let's say, toward the Tennessee line, if you can't go that way.
I think beyond
Greensboro, and I think they're saying that you're fine out on that end, and some folks are actually going north.
Coming up here, where from what we've been told by our news director, we're not expecting to get anything but a bit of rain here.
Wow.
Which I am very happy about. Carson Wise, my young brother. I said my youngest brother, as if I have more than one, my only brother. So I want to be clear. And for those of us who are making the connection, you know my name is Carsonia. My youngest brother is named after me, Carson. So I appreciate you coming on the show. Please stay safe, and we'll get an update from you later on.
I'll talk to you later.
All right. Thank you so much. So, folks, we now turn our attention to just kind of broadening up this conversation. I invited Professor Hamil Harris, who's been on the show before. He's actually guest hosted for me. He's a professor here at Morgan State University. He's an award-winning journalist. But I want to just kind of take a moment to think about and talk about the impact of these disasters on the Black community. Particularly the economically challenged Black communities, the economically challenged white and Hispanic communities, because when you start thinking about being able to evacuate, you need to have money to go and you need to have a place to go. And this should remind you, those who are definitely in tune with kind of following these historic patterns, think about Hurricane Katrina. Who stayed during Hurricane Katrina? It was Black folks and white folks and Hispanic folks who had no monies. And in that bunch, it was predominantly Black, economically challenged people who stayed. And so what do we do when we look at Wilmington, which is going to be one of the areas that they are predicting will be very, very hard hit by this storm? Professor Harris, can you just kind of set up for us what has been kind of the historic impact of this?
Well, historically, and it gets funny because I thought about it. I thought, my goodness, when I was at the Washington Post, I covered many storms in North Carolina. A lot of people will focus on Wilmington because it's a city of 110,000, the famous place, Wilmington 10, where, you know, Wilmington 10, this group of young adults bombed the grocery store, supposedly, and that whole piece. But that's a waterfront town that has a lot of resources. The most dangerous part that I've just realized is the Neuse River Basin. Wilmington is going to take care, you know, again, you have the community. But there are so many African Americans, your brother just talked about it, living in areas like Pine Top, Princeville, Tarboro. These communities that many African Americans live in live on what they call the Neuse River Basin, the Pimlico River Basin. Now, why is this important? These are main feeder areas from that the Atlantic Ocean flows into these rivers, and right on the and our people live right on the banks of these rivers. I remember when the last major storm hit North Carolina, literally coffins and cemeteries of our people came out of the ground. Cities were like Princeville, which is the oldest African-American jurisdiction in the country. This little place that for our people, former slaves, founded, again, is located in a place that is still a floodplain. They're used to floods. Unfortunately, every time it's a major 100-year flood, you have a massive disaster. So again, people talk about preparation, but the focus is so much on coastal beachfront communities, Nags Head, all the nice places.
Right, when they can pack up and they can go pack up and to go. Their winter home. Really.
But our people of color have nowhere to go, and no one's talking about these communities where people are still around. I've been listening to radio.
Well, you're talking about the impact of these storms. As you just said, they are used to flooding in these communities. So this is nothing new. But to have that type of damage, to be a constant presence in your life, particularly as we deal with global warming, and let's be clear, folks, I know there might be listeners who don't actually believe it. The climate is changing. I believe what the science is showing, we are in the midst of a major climatic shift. Like, everything can't be historic. If every storm is historic, then it becomes the new normal. It's the way of accepting what is happening in the environment. And unfortunately, those that are getting the impact of this, dealing with the constant flooding, never being able to completely kind of bail themselves out of that, are these economically challenged black communities.
I heard a report that said that the Atlantic Ocean along the eastern seaboard is around, at some points, 80 degrees. That's warm. Again, so how did that happen? Well, you know, think about the shipping lines, intercoastal waterways, more population, the things that some Republicans call as liberal thinking or whatever. This is reality. This is real. If you listen to news that doesn't really make the news, like the Trumps and stuff, you hear about fish kills, whales being beached and stuff like that. So something is happening to our waterways. And these storms, again, a hurricane, the energy of a hurricane. I'm from Pensacola, Florida. I worked as a Red Cross station manager before I went to college. The energy of any storm is water. And the water is sucked up into the storm and redeposited. And what you're seeing now is this energy, warm water, which it feeds upon. It's only two places most hurricanes ever go, up the Gulf of Mexico or up the Atlantic Ocean. In the old days, people said, oh, good, thank God it's the ocean, because the cold waters of the Atlantic will
kind of freeze it out.
Freeze it out.
Have this kind of damage.
Freeze it out and
see,
push it
right?
out. But now all of a
it's
sudden, when you have warm waters of the Atlantic, that doesn't even sound right. So all of a sudden, that storm is going to slow down. Have you heard that one? Slow down and spin for a while.
That's exactly
what's happening. And what happens every time there's a 100-year storm, major storm, there are new communities that start, but more importantly, old communities that die.
And that never get repaired. There are areas that were impacted by Hurricane Katrina, predominantly black, economically challenged neighborhoods that have not come back.
And it's very important to remember that so many of our people have migrated from North Carolina, South Carolina, to the Washington, D.C., Baltimore corridor.
Yes.
Ask somebody's grandmother where they're from.
That's our
it will
area.
Tell you that's our area.
I'm from South Carolina, my people.
Right. And so, again, it's very important for us to be mindful of what's going on now. And this storm is not just what's hitting, but where are people going and where are people going to live?
Now, I think we should continue with this and kind of expand it just a little bit, because we have to talk about the fact that 45 has inserted himself again into this damage. So, folks, if you are not aware of Donald Trump's comments as it pertains to the number of lives lost in Puerto Rico, where brown people live, let's be very clear. Let's take a listen to that clip and then let's talk about it.
Well, for about a year since Hurricane Maria, the government officials had been hellbent that the death count was 64, the official death count.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, that, you know, as you guys know, that sparked a lot of uproar, but the government still believed that the official death count was 64. It was 16 when Trump came to Puerto Rico, and right when Air Force One left, it rose up to like 36, which also sparked a lot of suspicion.
But it's interesting that you mentioned this. It was Puerto Rican officials who were giving a low death toll. It ultimately was outsiders who conducted their own study that found many more deaths, right?
Yeah, it was mainly news organizations, investigative reporters like Centro de Periodismo Investigativo, and then I think CNN joined in, and obviously all local and international media got involved in that conversation.
So when Donald Trump tweeted this morning, he tweeted, and this what you just heard was a response coming from Puerto Rico. It's a clip courtesy of NPR about the response to what Donald Trump tweeted. Take a listen to this, Professor Harris. And folks out there, feel free to join our conversation, 410-319-8888. We're talking about the impact of storms on Black economically challenged communities, on Hispanic economically challenged communities, and on white economically challenged communities. Donald Trump said 3,000 people did not die in the two hurricanes that hit Puerto Rico. When I left the island after the storm had hit, they had anywhere from 6 to 18 deaths. And I want to make a note that that is actually the one part of his statement that's factual. When he left, it was reported they had around 18 or so deaths. That's correct. As time went by, it did not go up by much, which is a lie, because by the time he got on that plane, it had already gone up to the 30s. Then a long time later, they started to report really large numbers, like 3,000. Listen to what Trump blames. He said, this was done by the Democrats in order to make me look as bad as possible when I was successfully raising billions of dollars to help rebuild Puerto Rico. If a person died for any reason, like old age, just add them on to the list. Bad politics. I love Puerto Rico. Professor Harris is shaking his head. When we come back from the break, folks, let's unpack that a little bit. I understand that we have a person who is unhinged living at 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue, but we also must understand that all of these policies and all of these tweets and all of these statements do impact our lives here in America. And that's what I want to talk about. Stand by. This is Today with Dr. K. I'm Dr. K. Wise Whitehead. Keep it here. We'll be right back after the break.
Jazz is an essential part of the universal language of music, one that anyone can understand and connect to. Music like this deserves a secure home on the radio dial. Become a part of the team that helps make great jazz possible. Do your part now by making a donation to keep jazz on public radio 88.9 alive and well. Go to weaa.org and click the Donate Now button. Thank you for listening.
September 15th from 10 a.m. till 2 p.m., Baltimore Metropolitan Alumni Chapter of Delta Sigma Theta Sorority and the Gamma Omicron Omega Alumni Chapter of Iota Phi Theta Fraternity Incorporated will present a criminal record expungement expo and resource fair at our Daily Bread, 752 Falls Way. Available will be attorneys on site, voter registration services, Baltimore City Health Department, workforce development, and more. For more information, James Mobley, 410-971-4492.
Public Radio WEAA 88.9 FM.
Welcome back to Today with Dr. K. I'm Dr. K. West Whitehead. We went to break listening to a clip from San Juan Mayor Carmen Yulín Cruz when she was responding to Donald Trump's lie by saying that we know your true colors and your lack of respect is appalling. For Donald Trump to lie and say that the numbers that have been recorded thus far of the people who died in Puerto Rico after those two hurricanes hit was some type of conspiracy policy set up by the Democrats to make him look bad.
And you know what was amazing? The dichotomy there was Donald Trump had a major verbal battle with the mayor of San Juan, Puerto Rico.
Yes.
But then
he called her nasty.
Right. But then the governor of Puerto Rico was a Republican, and there was a different type of mindset because he was hoping to get all this federal money. The people that died in Puerto Rico, initially, it was not just the wind of the storm, but it was the slow response time because they still talk about tons of crates things that could not be delivered into the communities because there was no infrastructure. The National Guard, the military was put on hold in terms of drops. When you think about a storm, there are people like babies that died. You know how they found out how many people really died? Because they went to the morticians and the morticians started asking, where are these bodies coming from? People got sick. They got cholera. So as a result of the slow response, because again, Donald Trump was treating Puerto Rico like it was another country.
Right. And unfortunately, a number of people, predominantly those that are on the far right, those that follow this idea around white supremacy and white nationalism, believe them. We don't want to help the immigrants, the foreigners. We don't want, as if Puerto Rico is not.
It was so much ignorance. Plus, another thing, they gave a no bid contract to some Republican operative who was close to Trump that was supposed to fix the infrastructure of the electrical grid in Puerto Rico. Well, guess what? You just asked General Honoré, who's always on TV, how that worked out. Because, again, you have people to this day in Puerto Rico that still don't have power.
And that is something
that means no power, no electricity, no refrigeration. People die of slow neglect. People in Puerto Rico who look like us, who look like everybody, had a slow, decrepit death because of the neglect of the country that was responsible for them, the United States of America.
Absolutely. So, folks, we're going to keep our eye close on what is happening with this Category 2 storm that was called before Hurricane Florence. And the fact that you have so many storms, tropical storms and hurricanes all coming together, this is what I mean about the global warming. So, folks, I just want you to keep that in mind and definitely keep what's happening in the southern part of our country in your prayers. I want to turn our attention now, and I want to get the phone lines open, to talking about this new report that was just released called From Consumers to Creators, The Digital Lives of Black Consumers. And you have, I know, Professor Harris, written about some of this information before. I just want to kind of go through it because I found it to be fascinating. Now, everyone knows, because I've said on this show before, that black folks in this country, African Americans in particular, that's who I'm talking about right now, spend $1.3 trillion annually. Let me be clear. We are the largest spending base in this country. And even though I'm saying black folks, I want to be very clear. I'm specifically talking about African Americans and not just black people across the diaspora. We spend $1.3 trillion annually. And yet, Professor Harris, we own the least amount of property. We have the least amount of health care. We have the least amount of life insurance. We do not put those things in place. But what we are spending our money on, and that's what I saw, we're spending our money on food, refrigerator items, technology, clothes, cars. We're spending a lot of money on goods and services, and the industry is now pushing more goods and services to our community.
And what's amazing, the great equalizer, it comes down to the cell phone. I remember when it first started in terms of mobile phones. At first, it was a mobile phone. And think about it. At this university and other universities, young people no longer walk around with laptops.
No, they don't.
They type on their phones. I do that. They don't go out and hug the dog and pick up a piece of paper called a newspaper. But they look and they text on the phone and they find out what's going on, what's relevant to them. Well, guess what? The industry now is following because that is a commodity. That is a, and why, when you think about major institutions like the Washington Post was sold for $200 million to Amazon. So basically the newspaper waved the white flag and sold out to the Amazon, the .com, and we're in the middle of that dot because we are the dot of the com.
No, let's be very clear. Black folks are the dot of the com. They estimate that our spending income is not going to go down, Professor Harris. It's actually going up. The five-year estimated growth is saying that by the year 2022, black folks are going to spend $1.54 trillion.
And that's because, you know,
goods and services.
A lot of times when you think about what built this country,
yes.
Trump, like I said, it was institutions that was not kind to us, that were not kind to us. We didn't own the newspapers. We didn't own the grocery store in Wilmington that was bombed. We didn't own the universities until they decided to give us a few HBCUs. So therefore, when we recreate and we rebuild our country, we rebuild stuff that's important to us. Family is important. Relationship, talking on the phone. So therefore, all of a sudden, the phone came out of the living room and the kitchen and came off the wall and came to the bedroom so we can also talk, we can look, we can entertain ourselves. So therefore, this economy out of necessity has borne the power that we see now in the Black community.
And the interesting thing is, as we start parsing these numbers out a little bit more, Black folks now, we are the second largest community to game. We are the biggest video gamers. Now, I want to make a note. We're not the biggest video gaming community that creates the video content.
That's the problem. We're the consumer. And that bothers me as a father of an 11-year-old who spends too much time on these guns where everybody is shooting everybody.
Fortnite.
How did you know?
Because I have a 17-year-old and a 15-year-old.
And the thing about it is that when you look at these games, I'm like, put it up, read a book. And it's almost addiction. Addiction behavior on this thing called Fortnite. And they're slick. And I'm like, what in the world is going on? So again, there will be like Newton's second law of Newton's law of physics, second law. For every action,
there will be an equal or greater reaction. Yes.
And so again, while we are consuming, and again, some of this is dirty money. Because what it is that we may be sleeping in one room and Junior is in another room doing Fortnite. But guess what? When we get the phone bill, we're not parsing out, well, who's paying for what? We just pay a blanket fee.
Yes.
So again, society is, when you think about a 14-year-old in Baltimore that took the life of a senior citizen.
Yes, he did.
A horrible situation.
Yes.
It came from a group home and all this stuff. The bottom line, there is a cost that we're paying. So just because we see the money being spent doesn't mean that it's money spent wisely.
But it's interesting because we don't know the long-term impact. I'm just going to open up the phones, 410-319-8888. We are talking about the fact that Black folks right now, when we look at the digital lives of Black consumers, we are the biggest consumers of technology at this moment. We have the largest spending base of any other group in this country, but yet we don't own things that actually appreciate in value, because your cell phone does not appreciate in value. Being able to get online and, you know, just upgrade. Being, you know, we spend $36 billion on gaming. Because it's, we're the second largest community. The first largest community is the Asian American community, but we're the second largest, and it's growing every day.
But when we get to me, when I want to know, when we get intoxicated by games, that's entertainment, then what buildings are not built? What engineering bottles? What things that we need to be focused on? Again, it's sad. The library in my neighborhood has been closed for 2 or 3 years and nobody's missing it. You know, again, people are just not going to go. And again, they go to the library to buy a book. We think all the data, I'm doing a research class this year at Morgan State, and people are going to the library, wow, I didn't know this was there. Many of us think everything in the world is on the internet, the Google.
But now I'm going to ask you this, because I think that this is where I get caught up, because I teach communication like you do.
Right.
And I spend a lot of time on my phone, whether I am Googling information, reading an article, updating my social network. So I'm doing that. I'm modeling the behavior to my son. So how can I step back and say, I want to regulate their use of social media and technology? And I find myself, I mean, I actually tracked. I went on and my son put on my phone, it's an app called Moment, where you can actually track how much time you spend on your phone. And I was amazed at the hours per day I spent updating, chatting, snapping, Instagramming, just on the phone consuming it. I think we're doing it as a culture, though.
But the problem is, I do the same thing you do, but think about when you're on your phone, what are you not on?
Right.
You know, you're not in a park getting peace of mind. Why is the psychological rate of people who are stressed out, who need counselors, skyrocketing? Why is the divorce rate skyrocketing? Mm. Why is all this stress rate? Because again,
you think technology is the reason.
Technology,
okay.
The unibrow, some people say, well, right. The problem is, when do you turn it off? I remember my daughter took my Facebook app and just took it off the phone. And all of a sudden, it's amazing because I'm not getting the dings, bings, and alarms. Mm-hmm. And we're on a 24-hour cycle. How many times have you gone to the bathroom and you check your Facebook on
come
the
on,
way?
Come on.
And then all of a sudden, 20 people are up, and it's 3:30 in the morning when you should be asleep.
Everybody's communicating. Communicate. Everybody is talking.
So we are not having the downtime. When you can't focus on the person who you married or who you love or whatever because you're so busy focusing on that screen. Again, a lot of times we have relegated our life almost to a 4-inch by 3/8 domain. And so therefore, we go to a movie, it's weird to us because we're not used to. So the question is, yes, technology is here, but what are we losing in the process of technology?
I want to add that there's something good that came out of this study that I do want to give some good news. And this was very exciting for me because even though there's still an educational gap for the African-American population, college enrollment is rising among recent African-American high school graduates at a growth rate higher than non-Hispanic white. So that's why you're not
and I think that's
it
a
is
beautiful
growing.
Thing.
I mean, again,
I do think that our people, we have a beautiful, inquisitive mind. And again, my son, thank the Lord with his looking at Fortnite, is an honors reading. I'm like, how did that happen? Because they are looking. And it's amazing how Trump can't keep up with this because a lot of people are listening to information and they're checking it out for themselves, looking at Google, looking at research. They say, wait a minute, what about this? What about that? So again, how many times now have cell phones been almost like a protection against the police because everybody is Facebooking live. People are doing things to let the world know what's really going on.
Right. But at the same time, and this is where I want to have the conversation, at the same time that we are consuming all this media, we're on our phones, we are sending our kids to college. 63% of African-American high school students enrolled directly in college between 2014 and 2016. Folks, that's up 55%. I think it is important for us to keep reminding the world that our children are brilliant. They are geniuses. They do want to learn. And right now, they are dominated when it comes to college enrollment.
I think so, because we still know the value of an education. We know we're working hard to go to the next level. We're not setting us on our laurels. Again, and you must give some credit to President Obama and the previous administration. So again, it just didn't happen because if you watch it, President Trump probably claimed this too. But
it's under President Obama because it happened in 2014.
That's under Obama. And what happened? He gave people hope. He gave people a vision.
He made sure there was money there. Kept Pell Grants there.
So now we're wondering what's going to happen 4 years from now when Trump is gone on or wherever he's going. What numbers will we see now?
I mean, young people ask me and they say, what should I do now? I'm like, you should go and get your master's. You need to ride out this storm here. Go back and get more education and ride out the storm if you can. I want to get to some of the phone calls, though. We have Clarence on the line from Northwest Baltimore. Clarence, thank you for joining this conversation. Are we able to get Clarence on the line?
You hear me?
I can hear you. How you doing, Clarence? Folks, I just want to make a note to folks who are listening. I know we're having some issues with the phones. We're trying to work that out, so do bear with us today. How are you, Clarence?
I'm fine. Thank you for asking, Doctor. And, my question to you, I just want to know what you guys' opinions are and what is the catalyst of the behavior patterns with the cell phones that you just described. I mean, what do you guys see behind it? Is it an internal need for some type of gratification, or is there something that's in the culture that's driving people towards that type of behavior where we spend that amount of time on the cell phones and looking at the screen? Because I would consider myself just the opposite. I spend probably as much time as you said, Dr. K, listening to the folks that are describing different phenomena in the culture that create that behavior.
Right.
So what do you guys take on that? Thank you.
Let me ask you something.
Thank you so much, Clarence. Do you want to stay on? He's already gone. Go ahead and
answer. It sounds like Clarence may be my age, older, or at least 50. We were raised in homes as young as some of those older people now, where we had grandmother, we had folks talking to us. We didn't have that necessity. But isn't it interesting we remember as children, we had what they called a party line, or when grandmama was in the kitchen and she was on the phone. But now these young people have their phone. It's not just a method to talk. They're liking, they're friending. Look at these terms where some people are jumping out of windows because someone unfriended them. But we know a friend, someone is sitting in your living room. Now they know a friend, somebody is on your phone in the bedroom just talking. So again, the phone seems to be much more critical of a necessity in a generation that didn't have somebody rocking them to sleep or reading them a bedtime story. So again, it's almost like there's a new need with a new generation, and it's more critical.
Now, it's interesting because, you know, Professor Harris and I kind of enter into this work at different places, because where I drill down as a communications professor is drilling down into what we call ambient intimacy. And ambient intimacy is this area where it looks at the ways in people get ways in which people get connected to technology, that technology actually feeds something in people. So the more you use it, the more you get fed by it, and the more you get addicted to it. One of the pushes now, which is to try to stop parents from introducing technology at such an early age to their children, is to reduce that long-term addiction, that ambient intimacy, that feeling you get when you don't have your phone and you leave the house and all day long you feel like something is missing because you don't have what you've come to depend upon. It is a device that actually produces all kind of emotional responses in you. It's the way that people feel when they go gambling. It is a high that you get. You gamble, you win, you get this high, and you get addicted to the high. There's something about going on to your technology, going on to social media, putting out your life in the world. And when someone likes that, when someone comments on that, when someone watches that, the research is showing that you get a response to that and you get addicted to the response. Why is that people do more and more outrageous things in order to become instant famous or because YouTube again, famous or social media famous?
It's almost like a false sense of heroism or heroes.
It's an addiction.
And it's funny because even the cell phone companies know it was a time if you didn't pay your bill, they would cut your phone off. But nowadays, they'll work you out. They have more creative payment plans to keep your phone on. Then they'll reduce your bill, whatever you want to do, but don't disconnect from us. If you notice that, they always seem to find a way to turn your phone back on because, again, we have become a world of strangers.
Yeah, well, we need to talk about whether or not that is something that is a good thing or a bad thing. I don't know. I don't really remember a time when we weren't strangers. I mean, my dad talks about the good old days when everyone got along. I'm like, the days of lynching and the civil rights movement, the days of Jim Crow, like those were not the good old days when everybody got along.
But I tell you what happened in those days is that isn't it ironic when someone passed away in those days, people would flock to your house, occupy your living room. Well, not all the time. I see people now. Look at your Facebook page. How many times do people make death announcements, sickness announcements, talk about stuff, and they'll put, I'm praying for you. They put the heart there. You have a whole thing that you can do. And I'm not knocking that, but I'm saying is that there was a time if something bad happened, you wouldn't call, you would show up. And again, I know in my life, I probably text up more than I show up. And that's the problem of this new opportunity.
Well, let's talk about it. We have Dwayne on the phone from Baltimore. Dwayne, how are you? Welcome to the conversation.
Hey, thank you, Dr. K. Hey, well before the cell phone became the new it thing, we were becoming more and more isolated as a society. Like, I can't think of how many times people don't even know who their next door neighbor is. We don't have that kind of cohesiveness that we had before. And during that time also, we were having all kinds of psychological problems in this society.
Yes.
Now, but what the cell phone has done, however, it has increased and enhanced, you know, us spiraling down the drain on those issues, because what the cell phone does is it gives you instant gratification.
Right.
Okay, and you get that little dopamine hit every time you get that little slight, your like and all that stuff. You get that little dopamine hit, and as you guys were discussing, it's just like heroin. It's the strongest, it's one of the strongest brain chemicals that you have. It's your dopamine, and too much of a good thing it's bad for you.
You're absolutely right. Thank you so much, Dwayne. There were a lot of studies that were done, folks, where people became, I don't know, YouTube famous or Instagram famous. They put up a video, got a million likes. All of a sudden, they're doing interviews. And how depressed people get after that high, right? That immediate shoot where they have their 15 minutes of fame that Andy Warhol talked about, but that the downside is that the drop from that and the push to try to reactivate that, to recreate that, is leading people into a lot of depression over technology.
And it's funny how those who know another way, I'm going to say a better way, when you think about Aretha Franklin's 8 or 9 hour funeral, because that was real music. That was back during a period of time when folks went to church and stayed there all day. Nowadays, you see people, a world has changed so much to, like you say, instant gratification. Give me the hit. When they remember when Twitter first came out, it was 120 characters, and then they doubled
it to give you more time. Yes,
and now if you really want to get smart, you just go to Instagram, and you can write all day long with a photo.
Or you can add tweets.
You can add tweets. So again, there's a mixture between what we had and what we have. And again, the bottom line of people still, you can't have a child, you can't get married through the phone. With the phone, but not through the phone.
Right.
So again, we
and
have
more people are connecting, you know, getting relationships through social media. And there's a new documentary out about, you know, hooking up.
But at the same
media.
Time, we don't forget the numbers about how many people go into disastrous situations via the phone. And when they finally see somebody, they don't even look like the picture says they look like on the phone. Again, this is a false sense a reality.
But you do create your own narrative. I mean, folks, let me ask you, 410-319-8888, when you go on to Facebook, do you put your best light forward? I mean, who actually goes on Facebook and puts the honest truth about what's happening in their life? I mean, I look through Facebook and I'm telling you, it seems like all of my friends are either curing cancer, you know, they're, you know, climbing mountains, jumping out of planes. Everybody's doing something amazing. But it's not getting to the heart of how we're really dealing with the struggles of what it's like to grow up in this country.
I still think we want community. And we have these social media. I think it's interesting how a lot of young people, a lot of students I teach, probably you too, they don't do Facebook. They do Instagram.
And Snapchat.
And Snapchat and Twitter. And some say, why would someone want to look like a puppy with a long tongue and all this stuff, flowers in your head? But that's their identity. That's their uniqueness. They don't want to be on Facebook because they say, my mother's on Facebook.
Yeah.
So again, I think it's interesting how every generation has their community.
Right. Well, the biggest consumers of Facebook, I mean, with the last numbers, were women over the age of 35, between 35 and 60. That was the biggest consumers. I want to get Nathaniel on the phone. He's from Northwest Baltimore. Nathaniel, how are you?
I'm fine. Thank you for taking my call.
Absolutely. Thank you for joining the conversation.
I think I agree with what he just said. It's a generational thing. I mean, and also we kind of want it both ways. I'm 52, so when I was a teenager or before the advent of all this other technology, it was the TV. It was the idiot box. We wanted it, you know, the kids to shut the TV off, you know, and read a book. But now, I mean, if they don't stay up with, you know, the technological trends, they're going to be behind. So we got to, you know, pick a side. Either we want them, you know, to keep up,
right,
or, you know, we want them to, you know, stay behind. I mean, because the paper media has fallen off. I mean, they're not printing as many books.
Right.
Now.
As many newspapers, right?
Not many newspapers. Everything is online.
Right.
I mean, and also you get a small, you can become popular, especially with the, you know, with the kids, you know, they just from their tennis shoes, how many pairs of shoes they have.
Oh, yes. You can make money. You can make money doing that.
You can make money. I mean, so I think we ought to, you know, either we want them to do it or we don't want them to do it. And then when we were coming up, you know, just like the brother said, you know, you had your aunt, your uncle might have been in the house. And, you know, it wasn't like it is now where it's just you and your mother, and your mother is only like 15 years older than you.
Right. And again,
I mean, you know, you guys do the same thing almost. So,
okay. Well, let me ask you this, Nathaniel, before you go. I'm not sure if you have children, but if you have children, do you regulate their social media use?
I do now, my daughter, because okay. I think she spends way too much time watching other children play with toys.
Wow.
And that seems to be, if you go in there, it is so many families that get into it. Even our people have them too, you know, have their own pages where they just open toys or, you know, do their daily life. But if you look at them, those are those families that are, say, under 50.
Right. You're right.
The younger families. And, you know, they push their kids towards this technology. They're making money. And, I mean, even if we don't create most of the games, this is what you have to do.
Right, you do.
Create the game. Yeah. The best thing that I did see that a man has, and I wish somebody would bring it here, is the Ninja Coding Ninja.
Yes.
You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, I know what you're talking about. And they have a lot of those that are similar to that, but I know what you mean in terms of teaching young children how to code so they can create their own games.
But at the same time, let me just be the skunk in the room. Are we teaching children how to pacify themselves? Because, again, it's nice to walk in the house and everybody's tapping quietly, no one's talking. But, again, when is there a time where we can engage young people, we can talk? I have four children. And, again, sometimes I didn't realize what my son is doing because it's nice and quiet so I can go rest.
Okay, but that's on you, though, Professor
Harris. But it's true on me.
Because we force our children, our boys, turn off their technology. We have dinner together and we talk. We have a rule in our household. Hey, when it's 7 o'clock, it's time for technology. Start whining. Say goodbye to your fan base because it's time to start cutting it off because I need to engage. I'm in the car. I'm taking their phones from them. When they get in the car, I'm like, you've been with those people all day. It's my time now. I want to know what's going on.
And I appreciate that because, again, I think we need to have frank conversations sometimes because, again, Facebook, that mentality is we want to celebrate. I'm struggling to lose weight because I had a heart attack. Okay, well, I put all my success, but when I went to Popeyes and ate something I didn't eat and I know I gained a pound, I'm not going to tell you that. I'm going to wait till I lose again.
Yeah.
So, again, we want to show the best. But, again, my question is there's always some type of, you know, there's two sides to every coin.
Right. I don't know. I just think about the parents, those that are just kind of thinking about how much your children engage in technology, that if we are to trace this back to the source, if we're going back to the root, then we go back to the parents, probably because you're paying the phone bill. You're the one paying the internet bill. I mean, if I want to cut off technology, which my husband does because my son's room is in the basement. I have a 17-year-old. When it gets to be a certain hour, what my husband does, he just simply goes over to the box and he turns the box off. He's like, okay, so we are turning the internet off in the household. And then he yells downstairs, hey, bring that phone upstairs. We want to see the phone on the counter so you don't have the phone under your pillow, in your bed, where you're engaging all day long.
Mine does that under the pillow thing, too.
You got to stop it. Thank you so much, Professor Hamil Harris.
It's great to be here.
At Morgan State University. He's a professor of communication. Folks, we're going to leave you here for just a moment. But when we come back, Baltimore City students are learning something called ALICE, where it's supposed to help them fight back and if an armed shooter comes into their classroom. So we've talked about on this show what happens, whether or not that's going to come here. Well, Baltimore City is preparing our students in case it does. We'll talk about that when we return. This is Today with Dr. K. I'm Dr. K. Wise Whitehead. Keep it here for a quick update from MTA, and we'll talk on the other side. All right. Thank you, Professor.
Light rail link is on time. No issues reported with the Metro subway link. We do have some bus diversions, including the Purple Line eastbound diverted at Pratt and Pulaski, the Yellow Line northbound diverted at North and Utah, the Lime Line westbound diverted at Eastern and Eden, and the Lime Line southbound direction diverted at